Good morning.
Mr. Torres, you're the coordinator of diversity, student, and family engagement for Kenosha Unified School District, KUSD. That's a lot of words. What is it that you do?
Well, the one of the things that I do is to basically bring community families together to be informed of how to navigate the school system, how to be to recognize the expectation of parents in any area of the school or education, and making sure that parents are involved in their child's education.
We know that parental involvement, as well as student engagement in activities in and out of the school that are related, co-curricular and extracurricular, is really foundational to persistence and to student success, isn't it?
Well, it is, because educators believe, and most of us believe, that the parent is the first teacher of the child. And most of the things that are learned at home can be brought back to the school. And it's one of those things that parents not necessarily just be involved, but also engage. And the difference between involvement and engage is if you bring your child to school, you get involved. But if you help your child at school or at home with his homework or whatever that might be, that would be called engagement.
Mr. Torres, you've been engaged with the community for a very long time. I've been back in Kenosha 20 years, and you were up to your elbows in community issues then, and you've been with the Kenosha Unified School District now for how long?
I've been with the district for about 15 years, but I've been here in Kenosha for 43 years. And my first job with the families was working with the Spanish Centers of Racine and Kenosha, and also the UMOS, United Migrant Opportunity Services. But also in 76, I was a Kenosha County employee doing outreach out in the farms. That was the year that the food stamp program came out. So I was the outreach person, letting the families and know about the food stamp program. Even though I was able to fill out their application, but they would have to come and get their food stamps. But it has always been my calling to help those families that are in need. So I meet the need intentionally.
Well, that's great. In fact, I think that's how we first met back then when you were doing that work in 76, mm-hmm. and I was here with the United Way as executive director.
Yes.
Way back when. So our relationship goes back for a long time. And that's why I asked you to be on the program this morning, Juan. Persistent listeners to Community Matters will remember that on Saturday, August 3rd, and that program is archived and you can listen to it, we had national experts on the social determinants of health talk with us, and we learned how what is going on in southeastern Wisconsin fits into a national evidence-based research model that shows that the social determinants, beyond just access to a doctor or a hospital, are really 80% of the cost of medical care. So there's not only a financial perspective. If you want to bend the healthcare cost curve, you need to address those social determinants that are causing people to get sick, and we can talk about those later. But there are things like diabetes, for example, which is a well-known one, and also other behaviors that might be bad for you. We also learned that there is a lot of evidence and a lot of research and a lot of success going on in different places in the country by looking at health and topics like the focus topic here in Kenosha of infant mortality through that lens. And you've had such experience in the community over many years so that you've been able to see this problem and talk about it, I think, in a way that is really rather unique. So I appreciate your being with us this morning, Juan.
Thank you, Lynn.
Now, you were a panelist, by the way, and I listened to what you said. You were made some very intelligent comments and very, very on-the-point comments at the recent Kenosha Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families Health Equity Forum in mid-July. And there are some resources referencing that and the research and publications of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities that relate to this topic that are on our WGTD website. If you go to WGTD.org and click on Community Matters program through the programs tab and get to the archives of Community Matters, you'll see that the August 3rd program description includes some references and resources that are very pertinent to what we're going to be talking about today. You served on this panel at the forum with some very distinguished speakers from around the state. Juan, it was a health equity focus. What did you take away? What did you find important at that forum? What did you learn? What should people be aware of?
One of the things that really kind of moved me was that there was a variety of people that came with different issues, different areas of health. And that is wonderful that what we so-called activists or so-called workers within the area of health or in the area of community come together and get excited and find different things and how we can help the people. One of the things that most of those individuals that came and focus on the area of expertise, they are good advocates too. They are good outreach workers, and that's what we really need, because sometimes as educators, we tend to keep that information within ourselves. But now it has to go down to the families. It has to go down to the people, and this is one of the things that I've known more than half of the people that came, and I know that those individuals do that, because otherwise, you know, it might stay only within us, and it doesn't go to those that want to learn a little bit more about, you know, infant mortality. Well, I don't know, because, you know, families take that as a way of life. You know, if I don't know, I'm not going to ask. And if you don't ask, you're not going to know. And education is very important. And I don't mean you have to have a degree, you know, just the idea of reading and knowing what you read. You know, if I want to become healthy, I need to read those recipes, or I need to read those labels and see what it means in order for me to be healthy. So those are the things that the families need to be reached on making it simple for them to act, and especially for those that don't have insurance. I have insurance, but I have never been sick. I don't take medications, but it is. Maybe I might be one in a million, but there's other people like that. But because we read, we try to maintain health, and that's a good thing.
Now, after you were at this thing that lasted half a day, I wonder if there's anything that you heard at that forum that has really stuck with you and made a particular impression. Did you learn anything that was new to you, or was there something about the issues that you just kind of makes you wake up at night worrying about them?
Yeah, it does. It does, because, you know, I got up this morning at 3 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't go back to sleep. But, you know, just thinking of as to how can we meet those families' needs, whether it's health, whether it's education, whether it's finances. But we always learn. A good teacher always learns. And some of this numbers, some of this percentages in infant mortality, I know it was high, but I didn't think it was that high. So that I took that. As a family, my mom lost her first two children. And at that time in the 60s or 50s, I mean, they didn't know anything about. I mean, if a child dies, that's normal. It's a normal. And that's sometimes how families perceive sometimes. It's a normal thing. That's going to happen. Or that happens. So there's really nothing behind that. If a child dies, a child dies, you know. But nowadays, you know, we're really focused on that and making sure that what is causing that.
Now, the Life Course Initiative is a rather big deal. It's being supported statewide by the Wisconsin Partnership Program of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And there are Racine and Kenosha collaboratives that are working on implementing these concepts that we're talking about. In Racine, they have an action agenda of priority of breastfeeding and teen health. Mm-hmm. In Kenosha, some of their topics that are of high priority are maternal wellness and housing. And so I encourage our listeners to learn about these activities and get involved with them and be supportive, because everyone can be supportive of this work. And once again, the reference to that is on our website on the August 3rd broadcast note. But if you look up Kenosha Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, you will find it via Google. Now, earlier in the month, we talked about what some of the social determinants of health are. And primarily, they are food, education, neighborhood and the physical environment, economic stability, the healthcare system, and community and the social context, including stress, social integration, support systems, and community engagement. And, of course, hunger is the easiest one to talk about. And we can talk about all of those. But the interesting thing is that the research evidence shows that these social determinants of health are what we need to focus on to really make our population healthier and to bring down the cost of health care in this nation. Juan, how do you see these topics, these factors of social determinants of health play out in the public schools? You have a very interesting position combined with your years with the UMOS and other organizations here in Kenosha County to have seen case after case and example after example of this. And we'd like to hear you talk about it because I think that being able to talk about specific examples and barriers from the perspective of your experience with working with families and students in this community is really important to help us understand these barriers. If you don't experience them yourself, it's really difficult to put yourself in another person's shoes and understand how these barriers can rear up. Maybe we should just talk about education in general to begin with. Go ahead.
One of the things that we have to really focus on is mindset, the mindset of people, their behaviors. I was sharing with the panel the last time. I said, you know, my first time that I went to a dentist was when I was in college.
That was a shock to me to hear that.
And
but I should have understood that. I should have understood that. I felt bad that I didn't understand that.
And the reason was that was we didn't know of insurance. My dad was a migrant worker. He was a field worker. So there was no insurance there. But hopefully, thank God that we never got sick, you know, that we never got sick. And we were nine in our family. You know, we were nine in our family. Like I mentioned, my mom lost two of the first children that were born, stillborn. But that was... We thought that as a normal thing, so we have to change that mindset and making sure and the behavior, because this is, you know, we think this is the way life is. Nobody has insurance, and the reason I went to that first day in my college years to go to the dentist was because I was really hurting, I don't even remember, it was in San Antonio, but he says, "Boy, you know, it's how long have you been to the dentist?" I said, "I've never been." He says, "Well, I'm glad you came because, you know, we're going to have to take out some teeth out because, you know." But it's like, and sometimes we have to think of the idea of if it doesn't hurt, we don't have nothing. You know, and those are the things that kind of makes me nervous and concerned that we still think that way, some of us. You know, if it doesn't hurt, well, I don't have to go to the doctor. I don't have no insurance. I don't have no job. I don't know how to read. And these are the behaviors this is the mindset that we have to kind of focus on because we can't really change no one. But changing it in a way that is more accessible to the families, like, you know, maybe having round tables about health in the community. Going to if the mountain can't come to you, you go to the mountain. You know, that kind of a thing. Because this is what I've been doing all my life. You know, doing outreach, working with families, I used to work for the Alcohol and Other Drugs Council, too, and that was the prevention of drugs and alcohol. I remember telling Mary Jane Landry, who was the director, I said, you know, if I go there, I can't say that I'm coming from the Alcohol and Other Drugs Council because they're not going to let me in. I said, I have to say I'm coming. But you see that perception, that mindset? I have to tell them that I'm coming from Frank Elementary, from the school district, and so I can get in. But within that, there's that situation, that behavior, you know. And with the schools, I believe the schools are doing a lot right now, more likely with mental health, mental issues. The idea with the food, I remember when I was working in one of the summer programs, and one of the kids says, you know, well, summer is here, and and this is the only place I eat. You know, that kind of a thing. So it makes you think, how is the family life? And I used to visit a lot of homes, and it was like...
And what's the implication, then, of that in on learning?
Is that we have to, learn how really families live.
And we have to learn that, and the students can't learn if they're hungry.
Right.
If you're malnourished, if you come to school hungry, how are you going to be able to concentrate on your studies?
Right.
Things have changed. I think that especially people in the baby boomer generation, which I'm the leading edge of, some of us have a difficult time conceiving that there are a lot of people in our community that fit this description. We went to school at a time when the only food you got was a carton of milk and some cookies in kindergarten and the primary grades, and that was that. And you brought a sack lunch, and that was it. But we don't live in that world anymore, and I think that that's part of the solution is getting people my age and the baby boomers to understand how supportive they need to be of what the current situation is and not live in the world of the past. It's not the 1950s anymore and the 60s when we grew up. And trying to judge the present through that lens will just lead us down the wrong solutions, and we won't even see what the problems are, will we?
Even this morning when I was coming to work, I was thinking, I can't believe that every child in this community brushes their teeth in the morning or at night.
And that's so foundational to health.
And that's, you know, I've learned that the mouth is the one that needs to be very healthy, because that's where all the blood flows and, you know.
It even has to do with your cardiac health,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
My guest this morning on Community Matters is Juan Torres. He's the coordinator of diversity, student, and family engagement for Kenosha Unified Schools. And we're talking about the social determinants of health with a bit of a focus on infant mortality and really focusing down on what social determinants of health, talking about that means here in Kenosha and Racine and Walworth and northeastern Lake Counties where we're speaking to. Now, Juan, let's talk a little bit about that food security issue. You've seen that from a different perspectives. How widespread is the food security problem from your vantage point? The statistics I've read are rather frightening, that ranging from where exactly you are in our listening area to 30 to 40% of people being food insecure.
Well, again, it hits the idea of, you know, of employment. What is it that we eat? And sometimes we don't know. I know schools are doing a good job in feeding the children, but sometimes, you know, kids are not eating that food. I go to the lunchrooms when I visit schools, and I ask them, aren't you going to eat your veggies? Oh, I don't like that. Or your carrots? I mean, they're good. You know, it's good for your body. For some reason, they haven't connected to that. They don't make a connection to food, you know, and that's one of the things that it's frustrating. It's concerning. Because all the food goes to waste. I mean, I remember when in the 60s, we ate government food, you know, beef or whatever, beans or rice and peanut butter. And I used to love that peanut butter, you know, a little bit of oil. But, you know, we had when you really need, you're going to eat. Or, you know, my parents used to have a saying, if you're hungry, everything is good. But then there was a thing that my mom used to say, "Ay, mijo, you know, you look so thin." Well, I guess good means to be fat. You see the concept of food, the availability of food right now is going up. You know, meat and whatever, or the good things are going up. I was reading the other day about when to select the breads, what kind of breads, because they have a lot of sugar or a lot of salt. How are we going to eat? And that relates to health, too. By the food we eat, how much we eat. I was making a joke the other day, yesterday, to Andy. He was talking about the keto diet. I said, there's a Mexican keto diet. It's poquito, poquito. Like keto, the word keto is in there. Poquito, a little bit. You know, don't eat too much. Make a little bit of a small portion. But we're used to eat a lot. You know, we're used to eating more. And nowadays, families don't eat at home. Some go to McDonald's, some go here, some go there. And And that's one of the things that I also see, the disconnection of families. One parent family. You need a dad. Most of my mentees in the public schools, they don't have dads, you know. And that was one of the things that Charmin Harris brought to that panel, in regarding the dads. Where are the dads? Why aren't they in school? Why aren't they involved? You know, I also run a father's program too, but it's one of those things that the disconnection of families have broken. It's not the same.
Is that partly because of the issue of having multiple jobs in order to support a family? Is that part of it?
Some of it, but I don't think all of it. I think it's just the disconnection, just because I want to, you know, they're young parents. Most of them are young parents. They still think they're teenagers. They still think that they need to do what they need to do. Somebody takes their child. There's a lot of child care. We'll just take the child to my aunt or my grandma or whatever. That's why grandmas and grandpas are the ones that are taking care of the children now.
And the very young parents don't have good parenting skills because they maybe didn't learn them in their own families.
But not knowing that all is going to affect other areas. You know, the area of the poverty, the area of health, where I'm not eating right. I'm eating just junk food, or I'm eating this. Well, who's the parent? Aren't you controlling your child? I mean, even in education, who would think that a second grader doesn't want to go to school? Huh?
They should be excited about going to school.
They should be excited. But why doesn't he want to go to school? And I tell the parent, well, who's the parent? You or the child? Who's taking care of? Who's got that control? So, you know, a lot has changed within the families. Like they used to have that school-based clinic at Brass. They don't have it anymore. No one came.
Well, that's remarkable. Tell me about that. I thought that was one of the best ideas I had heard of from KUSD.
And I even researched it.
And it was evidence-based, too,
yeah,
that trying to do it.
It was evidence-based, but, you know, for some reason, families don't want to come. They don't want to hear. They don't want to – I don't want to be told what to do. I already know what to do. It's kind of like the teenager telling the parent, I already know what to do. I know. Yeah, but you know, but you're not doing it. You're not taking care of your family the way you should, because there's no father or there's no mother or you have too many kids. And that's fine. It doesn't matter how many you have. It's just the idea of making sure that you're taking care of them.
Well, the nuclear family of without the grandparents nearby and uncles and aunts nearby, in many cases, is also a problem too, isn't it? Because
yes.
That social structure that was so common here and everywhere in the 50s and maybe the early 60s, that doesn't really exist anymore because we're so mobile.
Right. And that's what the kids, you know, come from too. What are they listening at home? Maybe nothing. There's no genuine advice coming from the parents, because they're also having a problem. You know, how, you know, so a lot of children at school, they need to have somebody that listens, somebody that hears them, somebody that they can trust. And they can say, I mean, one of my mentees says, I wanted you to be my mentor until I go to college. I say, you know what? If you go to college, I'll still be your mentor. You know, it's one of those things. And parents don't believe too much in their kids. You know, there's a percentage that doesn't, but hopefully there's more that do. And this is the things that I've learned. That's why I tell them, you know, education is really important. Even just by reading and understanding what you read and making your child read. Because reading is one of the things that is going to get those, it's going to also connect the gap. Because most of the Hispanic students in that drop out of school, they don't know how to read. They don't know how to read to learn, how to study, you know.
So that you were now addressing the ethnic and the racial gap in in achievement.
Right.
And being able to read at grade level by the second or third grade is really very foundational, isn't it?
Correct.
And why is it so foundational, one?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that you have most kids go to preschool, and then they go to kindergarten, first, second, third. So that's at least 4 years before you get to first grade or third grade. So it's one of those things that most kids do learn how to read. Some don't. Maybe those that are never instilled by their parents. Reading is good.
Encouragement at home, I think, is really important.
Yes, it is. And they don't have that. Most of the students don't have that.
And having access at home, having enough family disposable income to have access to reading materials is good. And I suppose you get very involved in promoting access to our libraries. As our listeners know, I'm involved with the library system. I'm currently on the Library Foundation Board. I used to be a trustee on the governing board. So our libraries are very important, too. But once again, it takes a parental or some guardian or a family advisor or a teacher or mentor to instill that love of libraries because you have to go there.
It takes that person, that individual with intention.
Or to go to the bookmobile. We have all kinds of outreach from the library system now, but you have to, you can't just bring the water. You have to have people drink it.
When I used to run the Even Start program, it was a KUSD. It was a national program, but it wasn't funded after I was there. But it was a literacy program that makes a connection to reading.
What was the name of it again?
The Even Start. Start Literacy Program.
Even Start Literacy. I vaguely remember that. And that's no longer funded. That's a shame.
Well, it's no longer funded, but the KUSD took it.
Good.
They're paying for that. And Mr. Hansel Lugo, if you ever wanted to invite him, you know, he's the director now. But we have the families learning English. We have the children learning their preschool numbers and letters and their names. But we also bring dentists into the picture so they can, you know, we also bring, you know, the doctors to tell the, you know, the parents. And this is what it is. Tell them the parents, you know, this is what it is. This is how you need to take care of, or the ASQs, you know, how to, in behavior-wise, how to deal with your child. And, you know, he's only five, so this is what you need to expect from a five-year-old. This is what you can expect from a six-year-old. And if it's off or a little bit on, don't worry about that. It'll fall in place. But making sure that the parents know what to do. And these are the things that I do when I explain to them. This is what it is. And this is how you need to go. And this is what you need to do. And when you go and talk to a principal, let's say there's a problem, you know, you make sure you take your notes. You make sure you take your dates. Don't go and complain because you're advocating for your child. And your child says, I don't want you to go, Mommy. You yell too much. You know, that child's going to... And I'm going to be left probably worse after you leave because nothing was solved. So making sure that this is what you need to do step by step with health. You know, make sure – I used to – a long time ago in Texas, I used to be the director for the WIC program. So I knew – I had to know something about women, you know the mammograms, the what milks, what food the child's going to eat, how to take care of them, you know, how to – Plus, I've been a father and a grandpa, so, you know, I know how to do diapers and all that stuff. But it's the intention of doing it, of helping out, of learning. Most young fathers don't do that.
So we're in a situation, actually, where KUSD and other supportive organizations in our community have an educative role to play with respect to parents.
Right.
Because not all parents have that skill set. And it's not always a matter of English facility either, because but this affects people of really black, white, brown. It affects people particularly with levels of poverty, which are very high in our listening area. In our listening area, the poverty and near poverty populations, if you add them together, in some parts of our listening area, that approaches 45-50% of the population, which is not the way it used to be in the memories of us baby boomers, which I think, once again, makes it hard for us sometimes to grasp and understand some of these issues, doesn't it?
Yes, and one of the good things that KUSD is doing in regards to the mental health, they have established collaborative partnerships. They work with they bring direct services to the families, and they provide with other organizations, the Professional Development Services, Inc. They get parents involved. They implemented a system that brings parents and teachers and counselors and together so that we can learn about what the child is going through. I mean, I go to the IEP meetings. An IEP stands for Individual Education Plan, as to what the child needs and how he needs to be taught in a way that he understands and the way that he is successful throughout his career.
We understand now that everyone's learning style isn't exactly the same.
No.
And you can go off the deep end on this topic, but there are real significant evidence-based differences among people in how we learn. I learn in a certain way. You learn probably better a slightly different way. I have to read things and speak them and write them down, and that fixes it in my memory. Some people have other learning styles or abilities and disabilities, and the school system is really working hard now to be responsive to these things. But they are important, and it requires the whole community working with the school system and being supportive to identify these needs and then to provide the money, resources, and then we need the professional resources in our community to deliver, don't we?
Yes, and that's why I really focus, and that's why I want the parent in the school. I want the parent in the school because it'll help, because schools can't do it all. And they need the help of the family. They need the help of the parent. I mean, like, I also taught for 10 years, first grade, second grade, third grade. And my parents, you know, they didn't have too many questions because I provided the answers right away. This is what it is. I used to give the kids, well, I used to for those that had superior attendance, I used to give I would buy 3 bikes, and I would tell them, but this is what I would tell the parent: if you want your child to win that bike, if you have a doctor's appointment, you need to do it after school, because if he misses, even though it's approved, he won't get it. He won't be eligible. I mean, you can put it, but once I mark his absent or approve or anything, because you have to be very upfront with parents. Well, first of all, you have to build that relationship with the parent, that whatever you say is true. And there's a connection. Anytime the child gets out of hand, parent, you need to come. And for any other thing, you know, your son, is he taking any medication? When do I have to, you know, when does he need that? Do you give it at home? I want to know all that. Or any allergies or whatever that is. Because in the classroom, I was getting involved in that, making sure that, you know, Johnny is crying again. What can I do? You need to come. Let's talk about that. Or come after school and we'll see, because, you know, even though he's doing good, he's not doing where he needs to be. But let's talk about that. I never retained a child. I think I did once because her English was not that. And I talked to the parent. I said, you know, your child we just came from Mexico. And she's going to go into the fourth grade, and she doesn't know enough English. Would it be okay if I retain her? She says, well, but then I said, you know, she can still be with me next year. And if there's any child that makes fun of her because she stayed 1 year, I'll take care of that with the mom. Okay, then that's okay. They call me maestro, you know, teacher. That's okay. So, you see, you have to tell them, be upfront with them, tell them the truth, and they'll respect that.
You're only one person. And there are a lot of students in the school, but this really reflects what also goes on in every classroom and why our teachers really need to be better resourced than they are. I know we do all we can for them, but folks in this community, really, we need to resource our schools and our teachers better, because as hard as the school board works to do its best job, frankly, they really need more.
Yeah, and is that teacher with intent, is that teacher that provides the learning, but also learns from their students. You know,
that's such an important concept. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that, Mr. Torres.
I used to have this child that he cried every time I would give him whether it was my test or it was a state test or whatever, and I would go to him and says, you know, I forgot his name, but I'm going to make one. You see, Roger, take your time, because he would start crying. To recognize the need of each child. I know I have 20 or 30, but you have enough time to know all of them. And if you have a concern of certain one, you need to say, maybe for recess, you know, you can remain with me. Or for lunch, I'll eat with you on lunch, and we're going to talk. I would make that time because I was concerned. And he's a child. He's not going to be hurt. So whatever the situation was, and then he would be okay. And he was, I could see him like, whew, you know, I released him from a big burden, you know, that he had, that whether it was a test or whether it was homework. Because I would ask him, how many of you brought your homework? And there were some that didn't. I said, okay, don't worry about it. We'll do it here. We'll all do it here. But make sure you bring it back, because that's your responsibility. If you take work home, you need to bring it back, whether done or not. You see, and that relaxes the child. And then you talk to them later. I say, you know, you're... And that's to recognize every child. Well, I can't because I got the... Well, you can, because you got a whole year. You know, take your time. Take a few minutes. Take it once. It doesn't take long. Because if you develop that, and some parents don't get involved because they're not in the habit of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not in a habit of brushing my teeth, I'm not going to brush them. If I'm not in the habit of eating right, I'm not going to eat. You have to put yourself in a habit of doing things that are good for you. You know, now I go to the doctor every time I need to. I do my healthy thing. I do this because I want to live longer.
Juan, I wonder whether or not some of the other issues that come up mm-hmm. as part of the social determinants of health have come across your desk and experience. Parents can't participate in the schools if they don't have transportation or if they're working three jobs in order to still have a place to live. How do you cope with issues like that?
Well, one of the things, you know, there are rules in the district that there's a couple, maybe three, but one of the rules is that you have to live 2 miles away from the school, two or more, in order for you to get transportation. Now
for the students.
Right. If the school moves the student because of there's no vacancy or whatever, if it's the school's decision to move a student, that student will continue transportation. Okay, if the parent wants to move the child to another school because he or the parents don't want him to go to that school, then the parent is responsible. All charter schools, the parents are responsible because that's a school of choice. That's a charter school. So if you want your child to go to any charter school, you're responsible for the transportation. There are those. So you have to live 2 miles or more away to get transportation. Or if it's a younger child, let's say first grader, and he's going to be crossing 52nd Street or a big Green Bay Road or a big street, that would be another way to get transportation. In my days, I don't know about your days, Len, but in my days, only the farm kids get transportation.
I never
all
saw
of us walked.
We all walked or took the orange line or the red line or the blue line or the green line then.
You see, one of the things is this. It's kind of like a two-sided coin. The one thing is that parents need to take responsibility. Like when I tell them in regards to disciplinary things, don't give your parent responsibility to the teacher. As a parent, you have responsibilities. So... But I'm not going to say, well, because I walked when I was in school, everybody has to walk. Well, that's not the point. The point is that the parent somehow has to take responsibility. They need to have a network, whether it's the aunt, the grandma, because some of us, like in the Hispanic population, we have extended family.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm going to call my uncle or my and get my child to school.
What about the parent getting to school for those after-school meetings if they're working three jobs or if they don't have their own car? That's a barrier too, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and that's an excuse too, because they would call me and I'm going to be having a meeting tonight or whatever. Mr. Torres, I don't have a way. I say I can pick you up, and then I could find out like, well, no, I'll ask. That's my sister-in-law, whoever, you know. Sometimes you have to find out.
Sometimes they are barriers, and sometimes they are just
Sometimes we bring our own iniquities. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to work, so if I don't want to work, I don't have no insurance, I don't have no money, so I'm bringing my own to the plate. So, well, no, you have to work, and maybe not all jobs give you insurance, but some will. You see, sometimes we bring our own, but I think there's cases that you have to help. You know, you have to, schools or organizations have to have that human equation.
Tell me, Mr. Torres, if you're speaking now and you've got an audience here on this radio station, what can members of the community listening to this program do to be of assistance? Is it working with parents in their neighborhood or their church community or their other faith communities? Is it working directly with your office? Are there organizations in the community that are supportive of families to help students succeed and thrive in education? Because that is one of the huge social determinants of health. General education and literacy. How can people get involved? If someone listens to this program and says, I want to do something, what can they do to get involved?
Well,
with KUSD.
Yeah, well, they can always call me. They can always
they can email you.
You can email me. They can
Juan
call me.
Juan Torres, that's JTORRES at KUSD.edu. Okay.
Yes. And, you know, and what area do they want to get involved? What do they want to do? It's best if they already have an idea. That's what I tell my parents, volunteer parents. If you bring an idea to the teacher or to the principal, that whatever you want to do is easier, you know, and you can get involved in that way.
So people should feel free to communicate with their
yes.
teachers,
yes.
communicate with principals in their neighborhood.
Yes. Get
and
to know them.
And also you can get in touch with the parent-teacher organization
yes.
for a particular school and see how you can be supportive of that organization,
right.
whether you're a parent of a kid in that school or not, right?
No, you're right, right. Whatever, and whatever issue, whatever area of expertise you might have or whatever area you want to get involved with, whether it's reading, teaching kids how to, you know, their manners or whatever, behaviors,
Now, in Kenosha, the Kenosha Life Course Initiative is sort of run by the convening agency, which is the Kenosha County Division of Health. And some of the people who are involved with that, who have actually been on this program and others here at WGTD Public Radio in southeastern Wisconsin, are Gwen Perry Bryan and Cynthia Johnson. And we have in Racine, the Racine Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families is convened by the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency. And the leadership team there consists of Samantha Perry, Karen Dotson, and Essie Allen, all with the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency. So those are ways that people can get involved. And there are also people who are interested in literacy, and we have a wonderful literacy council in each of these listening areas of WGTD, and people can get involved with those as well. How else could people get involved and be helpful? These are the principal ways, aren't they?
Yes, there's Kenosha has a lot of networking. So if you go to the library, if you go to the Kenosha Literacy Council, if you go to the KUSD, if you go to the Community Action Program with the WIC program, you know, it's just knowing your community.
Good. Well, my guest today on Community Matters has been Juan Torres of the Kenosha Unified School District. We've been talking about how the social determinants of health impact the schools and learning in Kenosha County and all of the surrounding areas of this station. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, encouraging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio.